Football 52 rocking and rolling on this February 18th. UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I'm Brady Hull. Sometimes we get late to the podcast, coach, because we just get to talking about so many different things that are going on. I tell you, this is the easiest time for a sports talk show host. There's never a downtime in sports anymore because of what college sports does. Every single day, there's a different story.
That the media thing has changed the way that we have to coach and the way that our players have to pay attention. You know, we used to do a lot of like media training, and then we would restrict players with media and things like that. And for the last several years, I've been trying to kind of educate the folks in my department that are, you know, they're my bosses. But any of our players could go and embarrass us at any moment with social media now, right? Like everybody has access to be a quote unquote journalist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that what you're talking about, that dynamic of this, there's just more information out there. There's more stories. There are more writers. There's more on there on the internet, and then it gets liked and tagged and all that stuff. And there is football news every single day.
If it's a slow day, all you got to do is just scan X and see who's tweeting what, whether it's sometimes it's a player, sometimes it's a team owner, sometimes it's an AD or a coach or whatever. There's always something going on. And then, of course, there's a lot of lawsuits going on in the NCAA. You know, we just kind of saw what was going down with Ole Miss's quarterback and everything. That was a crazy story. And there was it Joe Judge, their quarterback's coach, gets on and goes on a tangent about having kids in college and all that. I don't know if you saw that, but I was just thinking, man, now's not the time to bring this up. This is just going to get people going. And that was another story. So every single day, there's something unique going on. Sometimes it's positive. A lot of times it's negative.
In the business, we all talk about at least every conversation that I'm aware of inside and outside my building and with others and peers in the business. The NCAA is just running scared of the courts right now, and it's created a really difficult situation for coaches and administrators because we need some type of structure because we're seeing – the downside. I think the public that's just paying attention on the media, they see a lot of the upside of NIL, of revenue share, of transfer portal. And there are big upsides. I've talked about those before, you know, on this show and in other media forums. But there are big time downsides, including kids getting lost in the portal with no direction, kids getting promised things in terms of revenue share, NIL, contracts that they're not used to signing, agents that they're using that are not trained agents. They're, you know, their only qualification is they're an uncle or something like that. Yeah. It's really ugly right now for a lot of players, all of the changes, and it could be so much better if we had a governing body that had, I guess, confidence in competent legal guidance. And right now there doesn't seem to be any. In fact, recently, I thought it was quite strange. We had a directive from the NCAA to all member institutions not to help any players with appeals for the purpose of getting the appeal denied so that they would have the logical next step of going to court. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, so what... How did this come about?
Well, for years, we would say, you know, if Johnny comes into your office and says, hey, coach, I think I deserve an extra year, for example, I deserve an extra year because of this or this that happened in my life or on the field, injuries, it could be anything, right? And so as a compliance office and as a coaching staff, you kind of look for some precedent and then you say, okay, well, I mean, no two situations are exactly the same, but here's some precedent. Let's go ahead and generate an appeal. And we'll file that on your behalf. And that's the way business has been done in the NCAA for a long time. But there would always be an idea of, hey, look, if it doesn't work out, your next step would be through the courts. It would be legal. You'd have to take this through the courts. And forever, that's how the NCAA really preferred to do business. It's the natural way of doing things in America, right? Like first appeal to the governing body. And then if that doesn't work, then I guess you have to take it to court. Now they're specifically telling us not to do that, that we're somehow wrong or out of compliance with NCAA guidelines. And I don't know how they would ever prove that. There wasn't a lot of language or what the penalty would be. But it really puts us in a bad position because how do we help that player at that point?
Well, you're fighting for your student athletes, you know, and
yeah, it's through the process that's approved and in place, not just in the NCAA but everywhere, right?
Well, and if you guys can't help them, who is going to help them? You hope that their parents know stuff or they have a good agent or whatever, but not all these kids have money to just throw at lawyers to come in and do this kind of stuff. So I'm guessing, like, for you guys, like the Eric Gibson Jr. thing, because you guys were helpful in his process, they're basically saying don't help at all in that process.
They are. It really reminds me of like, don't want to like air my political views too much, but during COVID, the athletic trainers had a big responsibility dumped on them to police the athletes and coaches. What type of masks we were wearing? Were we wearing them correctly? If you fell asleep on the plane, did it slip down? I mean, there were a lot of absurdities that I remember and was aware of at that time. And I felt oftentimes like a combination of anger and frustration and pity for the athletic trainers because they had no training in COVID. That wasn't part of their training coming up, right? They have no training in that part of the medical world, but they were tasked with that job by the NCAA. And so it created a lot of uncomfortable situations for them and the people that they were basically policing. And now it's our compliance staff who's kind of in that same pinch where they're being told, to relay to us coaches this type of directive and then somehow expected to kind of police or administer that. Like, if I've got a player that I think deserves consideration for an extra year, mm-hmm. Where do I go with this? Because what I'm being told is that if I can draw a likely conclusion that they will be denied and then have to take it to court, then I have to completely step away and not do the appeal, which—
How do they—
They're thinking that at that point, they would not be able to go to court, or they try to go take it to the courts, and then the courts kick it back to the appeal process or something like that. It's bizarre.
Well, and in your case, you guys were all pretty confident that it was going to work out for Eric Gibson, right?
It absolutely should have worked out because you had a previous school that admitted wrongdoing.
Yeah.
That admitted
in writing,
breaking
right?
the rules in writing, the AD. At a blue blood school, the athletic director at LSU signed his name
and said, "We messed up."
In writing, and said, "LSU messed up.
Mm-hmm.
LSU broke the rules. LSU was wrong and did it wrong to Eric Gibson."
So in your mind, you're going, "This isn't going to go to court because, first off, and we know now Eric didn't take it to court, right? He just
doesn't have time.
He doesn't have time. He's getting ready for the next football season because he's still going to play, just not at the level he should be playing at now.
He wanted to participate in spring ball. He's a natural leader and wanted to go and lead another team, whatever he could do, you know. And I'm not saying the NCAA was wrong for any of that. I'm just saying to bully away from the process that's always been and always been natural in every other, you know, in every aspect of business, society, organizations, there's some type of ombudsman, there's some type of arbitration, there's some type of, okay, what is the next step for me to have my voice or my appeal be met? And to try to take that away with the very vague directive of, if it looks like it would not be approved,
and would
don't help them with the appeal. I want to, like, this is my biggest forum, I guess. So here I am fighting.
Well, and how do they determine what you know? Because you could always come back and say, "Oh no, I didn't think that. I thought they would."
Yeah,
they would win 100%.
Yeah, no, they left the standard up to us, which could go the other way.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's easy. I think it's easy for us to say, "Well, yeah, we thought it would be. You know, we thought it'd be approved." And I guess with every compliance officer, they do, I don't know if they take some kind of oath or whatever, but they do answer to the NCAA above the standard that they answer to coaches and in university administrators.
I guess that kind of makes sense.
And that is right. That is, you know, like, we shouldn't have situation, and some head coaches have gotten to this point when they become very famous, where they're kind of bullying the compliance staff. And it should not be that way. The compliance staff, you should have coaches in fear of living in the gray area, even or not understanding or breaking rules. And the compliance staff, even though their paycheck says UNC or some other school and not the NCAA, they should have authority and power over coaches in areas of legislation.
When did this memo, I guess, when were you told this? Was this a recent thing?
It first started to kind of float around about 6 months ago. Okay. And then last week we had a Big Sky Conference head coaches Zoom. Like, we used to have it in person, and then like some of us complained. I was the major complainant, to be full disclosure, of like, I don't want to take 2 or 3 days in the middle of the semester when my players are doing academics and weightlifting and all that stuff and go, you know, to Utah, which is where the headquarters are for the Big Sky, and have meetings that could have been done over Zoom. And I do miss the in-person part, but the biggest issue on that was travel. Like, every bit of travel that I make, that's one less recruiting trip I can send my coaches on. We actually have to pull back recruiting trips every year that we want to take because we don't have the budget for it. Hmm. And whatever, everybody's got a budget.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it's a, you know, but I'm not complaining, but I'm saying if we could do something on Zoom, let's do it. And so I appreciate the commissioner and athletic directors and everything kind of looking at that and saying, yeah, some of these schools are really struggling. I mean, Brady, we're like 20 million behind every year, the schools in our conference. So when I'm complaining about, you know, having to sacrifice $1,000 trip,
yeah,
$1,000 to a trip, some of these coaches in the Big Sky, they're like, what is he talking about? You know, but for us, it's a big deal. $1,000 is a big deal.
Well, you got to pinch pennies, and where you can avoid doing some of that stuff, where you can avoid taking a trip, where it's like, yeah, we can do the same stuff and achieve the same goal by jumping on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
Why do we need to make it a long 2-day thing, yeah, when we can have these conversations, and they can, yeah, be lengthy or whatever, but we can do that. We have the technology to do that now, yeah, so it makes sense.
And the commissioner would say there's something to, you know, something to be done in person. It was really his idea and his baby, and the big time schools do it. And I did love that, the, you know, to be in the same room with guys that I admire and have worked with and against for years and years. And then and our commissioner is very ambitious and cares about Big Sky football success. So there were a lot of benefits that we sacrificed, but you know, the other way they could have done it, one of the things that's pretty easy to get through budgetarily is if the Big Sky requires it of the schools and just bills the school directly, then it works. But that's not how that was working. So.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked that specifically, when the memo really came out or when a new bit of information came out, I just wondered how much of like the Trinidad Chambliss story has ignited this even more, where it's like, we really want to try to discourage teams from helping players get to that point where we are doing, you know, these lengthy court cases, which we, not lengthy, but we did see this was a pretty big deal, a pretty big national story with the Chambliss story.
Yeah, probably going to be happening for several more years, or until, like I say, until there's a courageous, confident governing body, whether that's the NCAA or something new for football, that, you know, I think has a competent legal team that can, with enough confidence, predict what might happen in the courts and then make legislation that gives us some guidance.
I guess when I look at the NCAA, and we, you know, going back to the beginning of the podcast where we just talk about there's news constantly, I always just find it really fascinating and a little annoying that, you know, schools, programs, we got Sac State story that we'll get into in a moment. I look back at the Mountain West and the Pac-12's deal, and that obviously went south. I always think it's odd that there's no governing body that is helping, like, lead that. It's basically the Mountain West and the Pac-12 get together on the side and say, hey, let's join forces for a scheduling deal. There's nobody in the NCAA coming over and saying, okay, let's talk here, because here's what I could see happening if this goes south. You're already putting language in here to try to prevent the Pac-12 from poaching your teams. And then what happened? The Pac-12 was poaching their teams, and now there's a lawsuit. But they're just off doing this to the side. You've got the Big Ten and the SEC both arguing their points of what should be the college football playoffs. And I guess you can't really equate this, but it's like the NFL. It's like if the AFC West came out and said, we want to have 9 teams in the playoffs and not 8 or not 7 or whatever. It's always fascinating. I get the NCAA is way bigger. There's a lot more teams, so there's a lot more of the individuality of all of it. But it's still, it's so odd to me that just like a Sac State can just say, we're out of the Big Sky. Now we're going to go and on our own, we're going to go try to find a new home.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
Yeah, it is weird because it's different. Maybe not unique, but unusual to the point that weird is a good moniker, but it's American, and that's what I like about it.
So you kind of like their ability to kind of go rogue and do...
Well, like their president is pretty controversial. And has sure. been for a long time, like even before he was president at Sacramento State. But he's ambitious, and he came in with a plan, and he has a comprehensive view. Like, so every president, every school president is going to assign some value to football, right? What? How much does football move the needle with enrollment? How much does football move the needle with retention? And every president is different. So my point is, it's arguable, you know? Their president believes football is everything, and he's putting his reputation on it. He's putting his job on the line, and so he pulled football out at the expense of all other sports, right? And now he's moving football to a new conference at the expense of all other sports. And, you know, you might read the stories and think, man, they're paying $25 million to make this move.
Yeah.
But I just told you, I mean, the teams at the top of our conference in Sacramento State is one of them. They're almost $25 million more than us in budget every year. So this is a very small amount of money for them. For us, it would be a huge, it's almost 2 years worth of athletic department budget. Like it would crush a school like UNC to try to do something like that without major outside institutional help or a change in institutional, you know, philosophy or something like that in terms of, well, how valuable is football? And football coaches shouldn't be the one to determine how valuable football is to the university. I'm just acknowledging the fact that there are differences of opinion in terms of what it's worth.
Yeah, and that one too, again, when I say rogue, you know, the Mount West Pac-12 deal obviously was really strange to me. This one, it seems odd, again, that a team is just able to pull out whenever they want and go somewhere. Just odd, I guess. But do I disagree with it? When I'm hearing the president, Luke Wood, when he's talking about what this would do for Sac State, and he's you know, hey, $25 million, we believe we're going to make up for that with student enrollment because we're going to be in the WAC with our football program. It's going to be in the WAC. I think the rest of the team's sports are going to be in the Big West. We believe that popularity, the fact, you know, for us moving up FBS is going to significantly increase the amount of eyeballs on our school. And that part I do look, it's a gamble, but I do, and when I hear you say they're making that, they're bringing that kind of money in, that makes me think, yeah, this is probably a good idea for them if they can swing it.
Yeah, he's 100% correct. The fit is going to be a problem. After having coached at BYU when we were independent and played several games on the East Coast every year, it's going to be a tough travel schedule for them. They're going to be like Hawaii, where Hawaii is generally a much better team than their record. If they find a way to get a few road wins, if Hawaii does every year, all of a sudden they've got that 8-9-10 win team.
Yeah.
But those road wins are super hard to come by at the University of Hawaii. Just like they're at home, their record is outstanding because it's very difficult to travel to Hawaii, play there, and win if they have a decent football team. Well, that's what Sac State is going to be now. For all those MAC teams, you know, having to travel across the country, it's going to be very challenging. I mean, you're not doing it like the NFL with an all first class plane and 2 days early and you know, the resources that they have, the way that they eat and the hotels that they stay at and stuff like that. This is going to be, you know, more of a college experience going across the country, and it is very, very difficult.
Well, and so I read stories like this, and I always like to do the fantasizing thing, you know, where I'm thinking, what if UNC, because you just saw North Dakota State go to the Mountain West. And again, North Dakota State, they win like almost every year. They win the whole thing. If the Bears keep if this trajectory keeps going up, and I know you think big, you think, hey, we want to be in, we want to win our conference, we want to be in the playoffs, and we want to compete for championships. And I think about those things and say, is that possible? And it's no disrespect to the Big Sky, because I love following the Big Sky Conference and all that. But is that something that you look at and ever think about? And maybe you can't answer that on this podcast, but is that a realistic thing someday? If the Bears in 5 years are a fixture in the FCS playoffs?
Yeah, without question, the Big Sky for decades now has looked to position themselves, if there is a major shift in college football, to move up or stay at the level that they're at. And so for a long time, that was the second highest level of college football. Now that you have the P4, G5, G6, whatever it is, and then FCS moniker, it's kind of the third level of football classification. And so the Big Sky is definitely looking at, hey, when does the split happen? When does the P4 break off? And what are these group of five schools going to do? And do we look more like them than we do the rest of FCS? And the answer is absolutely.
Yes.
Our teams are much more competitive against group of five and even power five schools than the rest of FCS, top to bottom. And so the big key for UNC within that puzzle is, you know, can we stay competitive, you know, with where we're at and our budgetary constraints and all the obstacles, right? And I lived it. Me and my staff lived this at SUU, where when we were hired, it was an 18-game losing streak that we inherited. We had the lowest budget in the conference. There were several people on the board of trustees that almost the first thing they said when they met me was, hey, I voted to drop football, so good luck with this thing. Well, in the third year, we won the first championship in school history. Then we got invited to the Big Sky. And then not only did we keep pace with the Big Sky, we won the Big Sky. And then I left and they won it two more times and got up to the third ranked team in the country. And this all costed. It brought a lot of students in. Enrollment grew like crazy. The university's stature grew like crazy. But also the cost of keeping the coaches. If you're going to have the top coaches, if you got the lowest budget in the conference, winning the conference, your coach is going to be in high demand. And so just to keep those coaches, that started to run up bills. And then SUU, I don't know if you remember this, but SUU, a couple of years after I left, as soon as the win losses went down, they left the Big Sky and said, it's too expensive. We need to go to a cheaper league that's not as ambitious. And then now they found out that's not the way to grow student enrollment. That's not the way to grow a university. And so now they're paying $5 million to jump back into the Big Sky. I mean, this is a school, like our budget, our total athletic department budget when I was there was only $7 million. Now they're paying $5 to correct the mistake of trying to compete in a lesser conference, in a less expensive conference. Now they're paying $5 million just for the chance to come back to the Big Sky.
That's insane. And well, and you think, you know, you can say what you want because there are presidents of colleges that are, you know, we're looking at the students first, not the student athlete, not the football pro.
Sure.
But it's a business. And we all know that when you think of college, you know, yeah, there's a good chance you think of, well, do they got a good football team? What's their basketball situation? Like that increases the attractiveness of a school if you have a fun football program, if you have a good football program. And of course, in some situations, if you have an exciting men's basketball program.
100%. True story. In about 2012 or 13 or something, at Southern Utah, where I was the head coach, was putting together a new mission statement for the university. And I was selected or asked to be part of the committee. And so we had a lot of, you know, the top administrators around the university and stuff that we would meet about once a week for – it was maybe a 6-week period, right? And we're going through all these drafts and so talking a lot about the university and the direction and what's going on, what's good. And somebody said in one of those meetings, hey, after we beat, because our football team went down and beat UNLV, after we beat UNLV, our applications from Las Vegas went up 3,000%.
Wow.
And the director of admissions was also on the committee. And immediately, before I could even have a chance to say, oh, well, shucks, you know, thanks, guys, the director of admission says, well, we did a lot more mailings in the last few years, and we did a lot more in our marketing for admissions.
Mm.
And it was just like, it's such an eye-opener to me, right? Because, like, I'm sure they did. I like that guy. I like the way he did his job. But I had drawn a direct line from our student enrollment and growth and the Vegas contributing to that to us stomping UNLV by 30 points
mm-hmm.
and putting SUU football on the map, right? Not everybody saw it that way. And these are intelligent, successful people. And that it just exists everywhere. So, you know, I'm older now, hopefully wiser, and I'm not going to sit here and say that football is the driver of everything. I'm going to say my job is to operate as if it is.
I guess you have to be more political in your presentation, even if you know that football, yeah, I know that that win over UNLV increased enrollment amongst Vegas-type students.
Yeah.
But now you go, well, because it's the same thing with our business too, Ed. It's like we go to an advertiser, and if an advertiser tells us,
I can't afford to advertise.
They'll say, or they'll say, business is rocking right
yeah,
now.
Right.
Business is rolling. And we don't dare say, well, when did it start? Okay, 6 months ago. You started advertising on the radio station 7-8 months ago. Oh, no, because yeah. then it's no, it's what we did this and then we did this.
Yeah.
And then we might lose that client. We might actually lose that client. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like, I know it was football. I know it was that win that created an uptick.
Yeah.
But me saying it almost like offends the president because it's like, no, I've been doing a bunch of other stuff. It's not just football. It 100%. Just depends on who you're dealing with
yeah,
at the
if
top.
If you're dealing with financial aid, they're going to say, well, we went out with a lot more aggressive packaging.
You yeah.
know? And then, you know, everybody's got their thing. Well, we put, you know, one of those crazy blow up men in front of the used cars. We put one of those out there.
That's what it was.
yeah.
Well, and I have to imagine. I mean, and I know this is true because the interest that you gained, I saw it on social media, even though you didn't quote unquote win against CSU, which we all know what happened in that game. There were, you and I talked about it the immediately following that on the podcast, you had suddenly an increase of guys interested in the program throughout the state. I would imagine people that were thinking about if, hey, maybe I'm not doing so well here at CSU or I'm not loving it here. Wow, that's a really cool thing, man. This is a really fun program. I like what there are some, not all of them. Sure, there are art students that have no idea that Ed Lamb even exists.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that look at that and say, that's a cool football program. They're on the up and up. I want to go there.
Here's what I'm seeing right now. We had three early enrollee freshmen from the state of Colorado. Since the day I took this job, part of my everyday experience, or at least most days, I will walk over at lunchtime and go eat in the dining hall where a lot of our football players eat, and they usually eat in kind of the same area. I'll just sit with them and try not to talk about football and grades and all the stuff that I would talk about when they're in our offices, but just try to be present and hearing them, have a good time, let them know that I can relax with them, have a meal. And the thing that I've seen in about the last 18 months, there are a bunch of Colorado students, not football players, that came with our football players because we're recruiting so many kids to Colorado. And they thought, oh, this guy's cool. He's going there. And so they're sitting at the table. They're local Colorado kids sitting at the table that are now UNC students. I attribute that to football recruiting and
yep.
now some football success, right? And some pointing in the right direction. Anyone else on campus could attribute it to, you know, something else or amazing pottery displays, you know.
Well, and again, you've talked about Andy Feinstein and you know, his support of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing you're not dealing with that kind of conflict when you do. Although, like you said, now you're kind of being more, maybe a little more reserved about it because you just never know
yeah.
If that president's going to go completely opposite and then it becomes a, for lack of a better term, a pissing contest to see who is
yeah.
really responsible for
right.
increasing enrollment, which we all look around and we see how big of an industry football is from top to bottom. So it would only be it's a kind of an obvious thing that if you have a successful program or you're building some success, you're going to increase enrollment.
Yeah, I think, you know, and Andy's one of the best that I've ever been around and become a good friend where we can be together and talk about things not work-related as well. And I appreciate that relationship. I think he would – I don't want to speak for him, but I think he would appreciate the fact that I acknowledge that, like a good president, he's well-rounded. He's supportive of a lot of different things. And football is certainly one of those. And I think we get our our requisite share of a university that's going through some challenging times, and he's been a great leader through those challenging times. You know, Sac State's president is making a lot of enemies on his campus, right? He's exposing himself, and he may be tanking that university. Football success will have a lot to do with his legacy, but there's also a public battle. What we didn't talk about with the Sac State thing is they hired a coach last year who's now at the University of Colorado, right?
Yep.
They hired a coach last year, paid him $1 million. A year in the Big Sky because the promise was, well, look, we're hiring a guy that's going to be coaching FBS. And so when it looked like they weren't going to get FBS, then the coach leaves. Now they got a little bit of egg on their face. And so the president throws everything he had at going FBS because he was going to make himself right. And so that's kind of the dynamic there that you got to read into.
That's a great point. Well, and you're also seeing with him jumping over to Colorado, you're seeing a ton of Sac State guys make the jump. And suddenly, you've got Buffs fans going, whoa, this Sac State dude, whoa, he's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
But it's great marketing for your school, that side. And then you add to that you're also making the jump. All of that does make things, it looks a lot brighter today, not like a major risk. It's a lot of money. But when you lay it out like that, too, and say, well, they're making that. Like they don't have to necessarily. They're going to have to ramp up their efforts, but they are seeing that kind of money come in.
Yeah. I think they had they have the most sports, to be fair, I think, in the Big Sky. But of Big Sky budgets, I think it's them and Sac State that were at the top. Montana State by far have the biggest football budgets because they have the fewest number of sports. So Sac State and UC Davis, they have.
How many sports does Montana State?
They have the league minimum. I think they're at 15-ish. We're kind of two more. You know, the outlier sports for us are the sports that don't compete in the Big Sky. But Montana State are only going to be Big Sky. They're 100% football. That's their tradition. They have no other kind of like community pressure to maintain any other sports. They want to maximize their funding for Big Sky sports. UNC was really built on baseball and wrestling in a lot of ways, right? Like I literally work in the Butler Hancock that's named after a wrestling and baseball coach, right? And so those are two really important components of UNC athletics. But now we have to split our a relatively small budget with more sports than Montana State. So the deficit grows even bigger. And we have a coaching staff and an administration that, you know, is our mantra is we've got to do more with less. We got to find a way. And I think that's a cool sports story, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, and I love it. And we love what we saw last year from this team. Coach, we got about 7 minutes or so here, and I want to keep going through here. You know, a couple weeks ago, we went through the offensive line. We went through the defensive line. Kind of wanted to shift the focus to skill position on the offensive side of the football and take a look at your running backs. Coming,
yes,
you know, making guys coming back, guys to watch out for. So we'll always kind of try to make that a part of these podcasts. But these conversations are so much fun. We could do this all day. But I definitely want to give those shout outs and just kind of investigate and see who's coming back, who to watch out for.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just pulling up the running backs here on the roster. I've said we're going to be built in the line of scrimmage. If we're as successful as I think that we can be in the Big Sky, you're going to see it show up in the line of scrimmage. That's where we will be dominant on the offensive and defensive line. And obviously the running backs are going to be the kind of one of the major determinants to how good our offensive line looks and vice versa. A good offensive line makes running backs look good. We moved Rocco Troer last season from safety to running back. He had some minor injuries that he worked through at times, kind of probably kept his overall playing time and numbers down. But he's a player that really can he can get out of the backfield and catch passes, really good hands. He's a fluid runner, kind of, you know, he's one of those kind of average size for us, at least at 6 foot, 200 pounds or so, but can do a lot of different things. He's played on special teams. He's played safety. He plays running back, and he's good in the pass game and the run game. Mathias Price is somebody that's played since he was a true freshman.
Yeah, big name there.
Big name, big kid, you know, 6'3", 220 pounds. This is a big back, plays like a big back. I think just his confidence has grown so much in just the last 6 months. I'm really excited to see his season this year. Colorado kid from Colorado Springs at Fountain Fort Carson. We got a lot of good players from that area and that school. Justin Gwynn finished the season as our most productive running back in the last two games. So he earned a scholarship from a walk-on position. One of our hardest workers in the weight room and on the field, very quiet, keeps to himself. Sometimes an impression of a coach maybe isn't accurate with how he is around the boys when I'm not around, but at least around coaches, he's kind of an all-business type of guy. He's really added a lot to our program with his approach and his work ethic. Zach Pekarek is – I'm just going in numerical order here down the roster.
Darn it. I was trying to invent – you know how I get. I'm like, okay, which name did he say first?
Putting him in order.
I get where you're going with this, yeah.
Zach Pekarek is a super athlete that just hasn't found his stride. We tried him at safety. He's more of an offensive player, and then he tore an ACL. He's one of the fastest, strongest players in our program. And he – while we had him at safety, he was – really one of the best special teams players that I've ever had. You know, blocked kicks. He made he blocked people. He made a lot of tackles on kickoff and punt. I think he could have a breakthrough at any time, and we feel like running back is his highest potential. So we've made the move, and we hope that doesn't hold him back.
Well, he's an Eastern Colorado guy too, Coach. So I need to catch up with Burlington, Colorado. That's 30 minutes from where I grew up. So we could probably talk farm at some point. I'm
originally went to Nebraska Kearney and then transferred to here. Knew some of our players. Again, the Colorado kids that we had recruited, he was familiar with, and a guy that came here in part just to be, you know, with guys he grew up with. Kyarius Boone, you saw him quite a bit at times last year. He's a water bug. On the roster, it says 6 foot. Okay. We'll go with that. But one of the strongest, quickest players in football at any level. And it shows when he's on the field. Tremendously hard worker. Going through a lot as a young man that I respect. Raising a family. Young wife, young child. Sometimes baby comes to practice. Because there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring to see him kind of go about trying to be a college football player and a student and a father and a husband. There's a lot for a young guy. Brandon Labert, Sacramento kid, walked on for us last year as a freshman and earned a scholarship. Had a really nice freshman year. Didn't get a lot of playing time or carries. Wasn't what it was about for him in that first year. But he showed enough where we said, we're not going to go find a better high school senior. You deserve the scholarship. And so great success story for him, just young, getting started. And those are kind of the returning guys for us there.
Several names, though, that we saw a lot.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys that produced last year, too. So that position, you talked about it, you know, the strengths of this team, we're going to definitely be building from the line back on both sides. But this running back position, with so many returners and high producers, should be a pretty solid group.
Yeah, I'm really excited about them, and that will be, you know, we've set out. I've said it before. You've heard me say it. We've set out to build a conference champion, not to get competitive, not to win six games. You know, we could have leaned into the portal and got competitive sooner, but there would be a ceiling on what we could get in the portal. The portal is itself a recruiting food chain, and where we sit on that food chain was not going to change. From decades past. Where we could make a difference was to develop high school football players, and that's really what's about to pay off in a big way. And if we're going to win the conference without having the highest rated recruiting classes, it has to be with these players that we've developed. So when you look at our line of scrimmage and it starts there, you're going to see a lot of homegrown high school kids that are surprising the league and taking it by storm.
I love it. I love following this program, Coach, and I can't wait. What are we going on? Year four? Is it year four for you already?
Season four.
That's insane. Yeah. That, I mean, it's just flying by, man. Coach, always appreciate you. You go anywhere we ask here on the podcast. And I love talking business of college football, politics of college football. And then sometimes, yeah, we just sit down and break into the roster a little bit and talk football, talk X's and O's. So I appreciate you kind of going around and around with me on these things.
What's next week? What position?
Do you want to stay on offense or do we want to just keep?
I think to step over to linebacker,
okay,
which really is another position that we've grown from within, and playing right behind that strength of our defensive line. I think major breakthroughs in that area are going to be so key to our success. We're going to play from the ball out. You know what I mean? We want to use the whole field. We want to use all 22 guys. But, you know, the closer you get to the ball, the more that we've been able to develop with you know, time, I would say. You've seen some of the, you know, the Carver Cheekses, the Braden Monroes, the Cam Chapas. Skill guys can come in as fairly young guys and contribute at a high level right away. It takes a little longer for the big boys. And that's what I'm really excited about, is our big boys now are not just guys that have, you know, maybe recruited by the previous staff or guys that transfer in. These are now homegrown high school kids that are in year three and four of their career, and they're massive.
I'm looking forward to a linebacker conversation coming up next week on Football 52. Coach, always appreciate you, my friend, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Brady.